What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.
Oi, the boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language, and sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature, so keep the volume down if there are kiddies around, and thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. You know that we are the number one show. So grab your fucking mates and now it's time to go. Cause it's the
booty booty.
It's time to get this party started. It's the
booty booty.
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
You're listening to FP Presents CF Montreal 3 Questions. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
I hit record on the broadcast last week, and I thought I did, and then I had an awesome line, an awesome open, and it wasn't recording.
Oh, really?
I redid it anyway. So we're back with CF Montreal 3 Questions, and also back is Olivier Brett. Last week we had John Still and Grant Needham fill in admirably, but Ollie, I'm not going to lie, I'm happy to see you again. So play-by-play man for RDS, for the team, and radio, TV host. You were gone. You were on March break.
I was gone to Cuba, which explains why I'm a slightly darker shade of white than the wall that's behind me right now.
I'm not seeing it, Ollie, but I trust you.
Exactly. That's precisely the point I was trying to make.
Okay. But you were able to catch the game, I imagine.
I did. I caught both games, actually. I caught FC Dallas from Cuba. And then I was back for last weekend. We were doing Toronto-Charlotte on RDS, and I managed to watch the Miami game as well.
Yeah. So, well, before we dive into 3 questions for CF Montreal, so we're going to look at early results legitimizing the club's decision to replace Losada. Can mm-hmm. they possibly keep it up? I mean, they're going to go through ebbs and flows this season. Matias Kokoro, agent of chaos. That's not really a question, but I put it in there. And is Sirwa's performance against Miami, is that a little bit of a blip, looked a little bit unsteady, or just part of the growth? But before we get into that, just wanted a quick take on your part on the start collectively of these Canadian MLS franchises. Off to a rip-roaring start.
Listen, I haven't watched all of Vancouver's matches, but you look at Toronto and Montreal. Like, Vancouver was on a decent run last year, so I think Toronto and Montreal were the two clubs you were looking at to see, okay, how much of a change are you actually able to affect from the get-go? Mm-hmm. John Herdman was there for decision day last year, but that was just a reason to kind of show your face and say, see you next year. For Laurent Courtois, nobody really knows him around the league. I'm talking about the general public. It's amazing what they've done. And I was telling you, we were doing the match on RDS. I was with Vendry Lefebvre. And, you know, there are those stories where there's the football aspect, which is always important, especially if you manage to go and get results, especially results on the road, which are always hard to get in MLS. Montreal and Toronto have done that. But the most significant picture image I have in my head, it's two things. It's Lorenzo Insigne jumping in John Herdman's arms after scoring that winner at the weekend against Charlotte, and Lorenzo Insigne celebrating with the fans at BMO Field as if he was in Napoli.
Yeah.
And you would have said that to me midway through last season. First of all, I would have been surprised that Lorenzo Insigne was still around. Same thing for Bernardeschi. There was so much trouble and ruckus. I think it's an incredible... Is it sustainable? I don't know. But in terms of rallying a group without making a ton of changes, what John Herdman has done is just outstanding. And in terms, from a Montreal perspective, in terms of coming back to 2022, which is basically what the message the club chose to send by hiring Laurent Courtois and everything that was said and done since his arrival, to make sure that the fans and the media knew that 2023 was kind of the mistake in all this and not the new trend. Well, that's just absolutely what's happening so far after three games.
Yeah, and you used a word there. I think it's underutilized, ruckus. I love that word, and I think it could well apply to 2023 and what Montreal went through from a player's perspective, also, but also from a club's perspective. So to dive into our first question, I think the club is validated in a sense or legitimized by the decision of hiring the right guy, but also just going through, we talk about that the carousel of coaches that have come through in Montreal, and you think, you roll your eyes as a fan or in that soccer community, think, not again. You know, perhaps it was the wrong decision, but is this really the right move? But through three games, pulling 7 points out of a possible 9 when they only amassed 8 last year on the road, it's pretty remarkable to watch, isn't it?
I was asked before the season started by colleagues on RDS, what would be a good points total for your first 6 matches? I said, you'd settle for 4, 5 would be nice, 7 would be great. I never in my wildest dreams thought that you'd have your 7 points in the bag after only 3 matches. And you'd done it. Like Tata Martino is saying, they should have won by a landslide at the
salty
weekend.
Salty man after that game, wasn't he?
I'm sorry. Like if Kokoro puts 1 or 2 away, it can swing. Now, Montreal weren't very comfortable at the end of that game, I understand. No. But were they by far the most underwhelming team in front of a Miami side that should have? I'm not too sure about that one. So they've done it with an interesting fashion. Hasn't been dominant, no. But getting those points, absolutely. Everybody in Montreal, I think, from the moment Laurent Courtois showed up for his first press conference on January 8, understood that you were back to what the club's DNA wants to be. But now you've confirmed that it is a club DNA. It wasn't a Wilfried Nancy DNA. It certainly wasn't a Hernan Losada DNA, because that veered off the course of everything we've been told since Olivier Renard's appointment as sporting director in 2019. Thierry Henry's arrival, obviously that was cut short because of COVID and family reasons, etc. But now you're seeing that you can bring back another coach. You can bring completely different players, because 2022, yes, in terms of ideas, in terms of desire, but it's not the same squad. It's got nothing to do with the squad you had in 2022. Yet you're coming back to the way you were doing things back then. And that's when I think you can say, it's a club DNA that's really starting to set in, and it absolutely validates the decision to let go Losada at the end of last year.
I think that's such an important point to highlight, Ollie. I'd never thought of it that way, that this is just a coming home of sorts, an alignment of philosophies and ideals, and you're seeing hallmarks of it on the pitch in terms of the playing style. You're not really seeing it coming to fruition entirely, but you're seeing a set of players, you're seeing a group of players who are coming together. And Sam Piette alluded to it in his post-game comments, mm-hmm. that with Courtois, you get transparency and there's no bullshit. And so as a player, it's so easy, and you can speak to it yourself as a former player, and I can certainly, that there's nothing more liberating as a player to, yes, you're going to be in the doghouse sometimes, you're not going to be in that starting 11, you're not going to be on the team sheet, you might be watching from the stands, but at least it's clear to you. And it's clear also in the way that everybody's conducting themselves, the comments, the visual cues, that everybody is together.
You're absolutely right. And if I said to you last year that Victor Wanyama would still be in Montreal to begin with in 2024, that you'd bring him on for Samuel Piette, and Piette would turn around and give the armband to Joel Waterman instead of Wanyama, and Wanyama would not be sulking, would you have believed me?
No, not at all. And he didn't even bat an eye.
Absolutely not. And I think that has everything to do with man management. You've, my understanding, and I'm not privy to any details or conversations that were had between the coach and Wanyama, but to be able to have a guy like that who kind of knows what his place is for the moment, accepts it, and does it with a positive attitude, it just shows you how much it's been a change since Courtois took over from Losada.
Yeah, for sure. And I was just going to say one more thing, and we'll kind of tie that up with a bow. The performance in the second half, you saw a decline. You saw perhaps the mental fatigue, the physical fatigue, yeah. The fitness in the Montreal side where they were overrun a little bit. Miami really took over. But the difference, so that to me recalled last year under Losada. except while the performance was reminiscent, the result was very different. And I think we've talked about it in previous episodes, you and I, about the intangibles and how Courtois, like, those are non-negotiables. And you can see it playing out. You can see the buy-in and every player expressing that in their own individual way. So collectively, they're a hard team to play against. And part of the reason why Martino is so salty is because they saw that game out. You saw a guy like Sanusi Ibrahim, maybe less successfully, should have killed more time in the corner, but his instincts are right. You saw a guy like Raheem Edwards, who wasn't brought in, I don't think, for his combativeness or his physicality, but holding his own against Ruiz on that left flank. So those are things that the players can build on. And Courtois has alluded to that as wanting to replicate the positive in every performance.
Absolutely. And there are the players who come in and there's the player who went out. When Bryce Duke goes out after 45 minutes, you know why he went out. He lost too many battles. And I think the main thing is he didn't track back enough. It's not normal that you see a Jules-Anthony Vilsain track back more than Bryce Duke. And that's the non-negotiable part. He always said it from January 8th. Laurent Courtois said, sacrificing for the team, making sure that you're all out in terms of energy output, putting the work in, that's the basic, like, standard line. Bryce Duke wasn't there. In the first game, I was wondering, first game of the season, would he have been taken out earlier if this was game 10? Well, you got your answer there. Game 3, he was off at halftime. And I think that sends a message not only to Bryce Duke, but to the whole team, especially players coming in later in the game.
And you see a Bryce Duke kind of turn the corner. He's been inconsistent. You're not really sure what iteration of Bryce Duke you're going to get in any given game. But that game against FC Dallas, you saw the upside of a Bryce Duke in his link-up play and in dropping deep, operating in the pockets, and then all of a sudden kind of ghosted in that first half. And as you said, not like unacceptable from Courtois' point of view. And so for a young man who last year moaned a little bit about being taken off at halftime by Lasada, which is a frequent thing that he did, a frequent move of his, do you see him bouncing back because there's a leadership and because there's the transparency?
I do believe he can get stronger on the ball. I do believe there's an awful lot of moments where he just gets caught because he wasn't scanning over his shoulder. That can be fixed in training. The one thing that worries me is the tracking back. That's the one thing where you don't have to be big. You don't have to be strong. You don't have to win anything. You just have to win the battle with your own mind and focus on the right thing. Forget the ball that you just lost and make sure that you're at the very least showing your teammates that you're tracking back. You're putting that effort in. That doesn't cost anything. You don't need to know. Your football IQ doesn't need to be squat to just run back and show everyone.
Yeah, you have to be willing to do it, to put in the shift.
And that's the part that I was disappointed with. I know he's reflected an awful lot on that in the offseason. Hopefully that's a learning curve for him, because I do believe, as you just said, that he has huge upside on the ball when he's got space and time. But now it's, are you willing to do the dirty stuff, or at least survive in moments where you're under pressure, you're being challenged physically? That's the big question mark over the next few weeks and months for him.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. We'll take a quick break and then we'll be back with our remaining two questions.
What up, Primers? It's JC, that guy. Don't miss a second of Premier League action only on FuboTV. Subscribe at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. With Serie A, League One, and One Soccer 2, you can get it all at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. Now, back to the show.
I swear I could talk to you for ages. This is why. This like turns into like 12 questions instead of 3 questions. Okay, we're back. So this is probably my weakest question of the three, Ollie. I wrote Matias Kokoro, agent of chaos, ? Because I think if you look at all of the players on the squad, and yes, you know, you have the right person in place in Courtois, you have an alignment in terms of club brand, coaching brand, and philosophy. But I think in terms of an archetype of the Courtois era, I don't think anybody fits it better or is more emblematic of it than Matias Kokoro. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I also agree that chaos is a lot more enjoyable once you get off the mark and you score, especially after missing so many chances. The guy's infectious. Like we spoke about it during training camp. And he'll be infectious both ways, I think, in a very positive way with his teammates. He'll be very frustrating with oppositions. That was a great example. Does it at the weekend against Miami? Does he need to be more clinical, more calm in front of goal? Yes. Will he get those penalties in MLS, especially with VAR? No, he won't. But nobody will argue with him on that one because it led to a corner that Alvarez was able to put away. Shout out to set pieces, by the way, because it yes. really wasn't a strong suit of Montreal last season. And I did feel have a feeling at the beginning of this year that it could be a bit of a wild card, something that could buy Laurent Courtois some time to get settled in. And that was a fantastic example of it. But coming back to Kokoro, he'll bother everybody. He'll put pressure, and I think that's a huge aspect. Now, guys behind him will have to start being even smarter now to know where is he pushing the opposition? Where does the other team tend to put the ball when he ruffles the feathers of a center back or the goalkeeper? And once you figure that out, it's not only Kokoro who'll be able to get something done himself, but the second ball will be huge because that's where you'll be able to find him, because after putting pressure, he'll be high up the pitch and you'll be able to get in very dangerous positions, not only kind of building up the play slowly and patiently, but being a bit more direct, which Laurent Courtois is absolutely not against.
Yeah, it's a really good point, because sometimes that agent of chaos exists in isolation, because what makes them so effective is that they're unpredictable, is that they're coming at you kind of mm-hmm. a wild look in their eyes. And that's what's unsettling to the opposition's defense. But it can also be unsettling to a certain degree, as you said, if you're acting as that trigger on the press, the players behind you don't necessarily, they haven't gotten to know your tendencies, and you're less predictable in a sense. So that's something that the team is going to have to grow into. But I just love, I don't know if it's his swagger, his mustache, the way, like his gait where his chest is up and out. But I love how wholeheartedly committed and earnest he is in his efforts. He's just highly, highly likable. And I think if I had to get a jersey right now for CF Montreal with a name on the back, it would be a toss-up between Piet and Kokoro. So that's how much I love him really early on.
You know what? That'll be a good question to ask CF Montreal, like what jerseys are selling at the moment, especially with the new secondary shirt. Just to, because you mentioned an awful lot of his attributes. Let's be honest. It's the mustache.
Come on. I mean, is it the best one going in the league right now?
That's a good question. Joe Willis in goals for Nashville had a, does he still have the mustache going?
Because
last year in Nashville, when I saw him, I literally in a broadcast call asked him a question about the mustache and how he grooms it. It was that impressive. So that'd be a good contest. Who has the best mustache in MLS? Mastroeni. Doesn't have the mustache anymore, but he had an epic one. That's in top five of the history of the league, definitely.
I think we need to find, we do need to do a poll. We need to poll the CF Montreal fans for who has the best mustache kind of league-wide. And then we need to find Kokoro, like a profile pic, pre-mustache.
I'm not sure that exists because if I'm not mistaken, when he was seven, I'm pretty sure that in primary school he didn't have one. But if I'm not mistaken, because we had a sit down with him in Orlando during training camp with my colleague from RDS, Nicolas Landry, and I think that he asked him, did you always have one? And I believe the answer was yes. So maybe it was a bit softer and less of a rugged mustache. I can't believe we're on that slippery slide. But
it's
anyway,
it's a good tangent, Ollie. I feel like my son's 14 now, and I bug him. He has a mustache douce.
Yeah.
For all of our Anglophone listeners, it just means that mustache's kind of coming in. You're like those guys in the playoffs and in hockey where they so desperately want to grow in the facial hair, but they're incapable of doing it. That's where my son Jack is currently, so there has to be something. I'm going to do my due diligence on this topic.
We'll dig into it.
So you mentioned set pieces, so that is a good segue before we get into Sirwa, just to talk about the brilliance of Mathieu Chouinard and how good he has been, not only in executing those set pieces, because the way that he strikes that ball for Kokoro's goal, you could take that and you could put it in any league in the world. And that is something that you would see, just the brilliance of it, the touch on it, the spin, where he puts it in kind of that corridor of uncertainty. So the goalie's kind of feels like he can't come out to get it. He stays on his line and Kokoro finishes it. So not only the set pieces, Ollie, but also just his play in general this year.
And defensively as well, because that's one of the things, especially in the first half, I was really impressed with Samuel Piet on one hand, but that's his bread and butter, right? That's not the first thing you think about when you think about Mathieu Chouinard, but he intercepted so many balls, just managed to get in between the opposition and the balls so many times to just settle things down. He is so smart. We were talking about soccer IQ with Bryce Duke, and you don't need to have much to just track back. But to play like Mathieu Chouinard, you need a ton of soccer IQ. And the way he delivers that ball for the set piece on Kokoro, you have to hit it hard, but you have to give it the right loop. You have to make sure it drops in the right place, and nothing is by accident. And that wasn't the first set piece. Ariel Lassiter had a few really good corners in that game, but Mathieu Chouinard's delivery, there's just enough spin on it, yet there's enough speed on it as well for a defender, for an attacker to just touch it and something can happen. You can attack those balls with conviction. He's really, really good. If he continues like that, I think you'll have to start talking about one of the most underrated players in the league at this stage. Now, I know there are other really, really good players, but in terms of paying attention to Montreal, I don't think Americans are the most astute, you know, because it's often and that's okay. Just like we look at the Canadian teams first and we look at the American teams after. But Mathieu Chouinard, okay, he went to the All-Star last year, but was that by default because of Montreal's season rather than because they really see everything he brings to the table? Anybody who spends two or three games looking at Mathieu Chouinard, it's just so obvious. He's an incredible talent. I asked many people, people who coached him, people who are around him at the moment, what's his ceiling? Nobody is able to answer me, because the more you put him around good players in a good system, the better he gets. And that's what makes him fascinating.
And for a player who's the proverbial Swiss Army knife, sometimes to his detriment, because he never really gets to make a sustained impact on the game with the players around him growing, to see him ply his trade in the middle of the park, which to me is best position alongside Sam Piet. I think that just bodes well for this team and its growth. And you alluded to the American audience and maybe not talking about how they're maybe not that astute. I think it's that, but it's also because I don't think they give a shit about the Canadian franchises. But I think that he is on their radar a little bit now. And I hope to goodness that he's on Mauro Biello's radar. I mean, I know he is already, but do you think that he gets named to this roster today in this crucial game against Trinidad and Tobago?
I think you can't leave him out. He can be useful. And so if you were stuck, would you play him right back? He'd figure it out.
Yeah, of course. You know, you'd have the confidence that he would. Yeah.
Because he's just that smart. So does that mean that he plays and I'd be pushing for him to be in a starting 11? Probably not at this stage. That's fine. On the other side of Copa America or at Copa America, it'd be interesting to see everybody's progression, especially if he keeps being that good and utilized in that way by Laurent Courtois. But Mathieu Chouinard, you'd go, because I want to make a difference now. I'm talking about more people analyzing MLS clubs, right? Because if you go around all the sporting directors in the States, who would pass on Mathieu Chouinard in MLS? I don't see many people who would pass on him. And especially because Olivier Renard gave him a new contract, what was it, a year and a half ago or something like that? What timing that was to give him that new contract, because he's worth double at this stage. I forget what he's on. He must be on two something maybe, but he's worth double. And that makes him huge value for MLS clubs. Not that he's leaving, but I'm just putting into perspective that very few clubs in MLS would pass on a guy like Chouinard.
Yeah, for sure. And then another guy who should be on Mauro Biello's radar is Jonathan Sirwa. And he's done incredibly well in this league, gets the starting job last year, kind of falls into it because of the injury to James Pantemis. 11 clean sheets on it. He was one of the bright spots of that season last year, where it was pretty bleak. Less steady in this game, less convincing. And I think if a team, say like Chicago, that Montreal is going into this coming Saturday, is looking for a blueprint for how to hurt Montreal. I think you look at those balls, those floated balls into the second post. I gave Sirois some fits, as did balls in behind. So do you think this is just a little blip on the radar and he steadies the ship come Saturday, or is this just part of the growth?
If that was a kind of a reoccurring theme for him since he took the starting job last year, that every time there's a ball in the box, you felt like it was unsettling, and maybe I'd be a bit more concerned. What I really think is, at the beginning of this week, or whenever they do it, himself and Romuald Pézard, the goalkeeper coach for CF Montreal, I think that video session with him, be it 30 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour, whatever it is, that's going to be worth 3 or 4 months of experience for him. Because I think he was aware of the moment. He was aware Luis Suarez was on. He was aware Busquets came on. He'd never experienced anything like that in terms of an occasion in his career. I'm not talking about an important moment, an important moment in his career, because he's had loads of those since last year. Every time there's a bigger game, it's a first for him. This was a first, and probably a precursor to what's coming on May 11th when Miami will be in town in at Stade Saputo. I think I put it down to that, especially because of the moment in the game. You just felt things were getting shaky. Jordi Alba, just the position he ends up in, shows you that they were throwing the kitchen sink at you. Everybody maybe felt, because the other aspect is the preparation as well. What did you prepare for in that game? Did you prepare for Messi? Did you prepare for Suarez? Did you prepare for Campana? Did you prepare for crosses in the box like that, or balls fed through the middle? That must have been a really, really hard match to prepare for, because there were so many unknowns, considering Miami were playing last Thursday in Nashville and playing again on Wednesday. So you didn't know what to expect. Did that affect him when in the end it looked a lot more like Miami's A team that you were facing rather than what you faced to begin with? And now you had to adjust because everything was changing and going so fast, with lots of goals being scored in the last at the end of the game. So I put it down to that more than anything else, but it will have been a huge learning curve for him, that's for sure.
Yeah, because he's been a guy who looks, and it was a word that I put down to talk about Kokoro, but it applies to Sirois in that he's unflappable. It seems like he always plays the game and he's not intimidated by the occasion. But that was a good point that you made about, you know, being up against the likes of Alba and Busquets, and Messi didn't suit up, but Suarez right there as well. And those scenes post-game, JF Teotonio, who writes for La Presse, had some great videos and great pictures of a guy like Chouinard getting his number 10 Argentinian jersey signed by Messi and Suarez and Kokoro together. So those are great scenes. And I mean, I'm happy that those players get that. So they didn't necessarily get to test themselves against Messi, but you kind of get the occasion a little bit.
Hey, if you're able to come back to Montreal with a signed Messi shirt and 3 points, you'll take that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. 100%. I think the result makes it even better, right? It kind of makes, I almost puts the exclamation point on that moment that you're getting your jersey signed, but you're walking away the winner.
Yeah, and you get a bit less flack than Dax McCarthy last year, who lost for Nashville against Miami and was very happy to go on social media showing his Messi shirt. I understand that it's a dream come true for many players, but that can be a bit of a touchy subject. When you won and you had that pass on Kokoro's goal, I think every CF Montreal fan will say, okay, you can go and get your shirt signed. No problem, Messi, go ahead.
Yeah, you get the green light. You get the pass on that. Okay, well, that's it for us this week. Thank you so much, Ollie. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. FuboTV.com/FootyPrime for Premier League, Ligue 1, One Soccer, where you can watch the game that we talked about, that crucial matchup, Canada against Trinidad, as to get into Copa America. And TonyBet.ca as well, if you want to place any bets. So thank you for listening. Keep supporting independent podcasts, and cheers for listening.
This episode of Footy Prime has been brought to you by FuboTV and by TonyBet. Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter at @Footy_Prime and on Instagram at @FootyPrimeIG. And visit WeAreFootyPrime.com and sign up for our newsletter.
Lots of cheers and lots of thank yous. Can never say that enough, I guess.
What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show. Oh.